Hello, my name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Dustina and Kobe, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Tom will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Tom, an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organizations, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me strength to respect the things I cannot change, or to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Kate will read the steps.
There you go. The 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Number nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for a knowledge of his will for us and for the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Howard will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Howard. I'm an alcoholic. No glasses. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group's purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting their group or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain ever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA, as such, ought never be organized. We may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no outside opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into controversy, into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, the anonymity of our spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Kristen.
Yes, I'm shorter. Thank you. Hi, I'm Kristen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 1st, 1990. My home group's the Atlantic Group, and my sponsor is Bonnie, who unfortunately is not here tonight because she's basking on the shores of Mexico. So you guys are all my witness that she is probably one of the greatest gifts of my life, and you know, I'm so grateful to have her in my life. And the one thing I want to say to newcomers is, if you're looking for a sponsor, you know, be open to meeting a sponsor, and it will be one of the most intimate, greatest relationships you will ever experience. However, you might not feel like they're your best friend to start with. You might not feel like they can just hang out and be your therapist. And you know what? If you feel that way, they're doing their job. You know, one of the best gifts Bonnie has given to me is she has helped me get out of my own way when my disease was in full force, and she helped me get me out of my own way by the solutions that are provided in the Big Book and the 12 Steps. So that's what I want to say about sponsorship. You know, one thing that's become very clear to me, I know this is like the abridged version of Kristen Hurd as an alcoholic, so I'm going to try and do this. You know, one thing that's really clear to me as I've done the work in this program is, you know, my disease was full force from the moment I was born until all the way through before I picked up a drink, and it works very hard to kick my butt well after I've put down a drink. You know, when I was a kid, I was the kind of kid where I always had to have more. I had to be the best. I had to have, like, more Madonna bracelets, more Smurfs, more everything you can imagine, you know. I had to have more footballs, baseballs, more friends. I had to have the best parties. And, like, I was the kind of kid where, like, at Christmas time, I got two of those Def Leppard Pyromania cassettes. Remember cassettes? And, you know, most normal people would think, oh, you know, I'm going to return one and get, like, the Madonna cassette, okay? No, my thing was, I have two and you don't, you know? So, you know, clearly from a young age, like, you know, my ego was totally running rampant and needless to say, I was kind of a jerk. So you can imagine what I was like when I picked up a drink. And I picked up my first drink when I was 12 years old. And my father's also, my father's given me permission to disclose that he's also in recovery, but my father was in recovery from a young age, and I will say I used to look at his Alcoholics Anonymous book sitting in the back of his car and have no idea what it was. And so when I was 12 years old and I picked up my first drink, I was at a wedding, and to keep a long story short, basically there was a bunch of champagne around a table and I slammed down each glass. And I remember my father looking at me and saying, "You drink like I did." And I had no idea what that meant. All I know is I was wearing a pink skirt suit. I had a cast up to here because I'd fallen out of a tree about 3 weeks earlier, and I was spinning around on the dance floor at the wedding. So, you know, You know, that's what it was like for me from day one. And then when, you know, then I didn't drink until I was a freshman in high school. And if you're looking at me and you're thinking, wow, she got sober in 1990, I've been sober 17 years, and I'm 34, so I've been sober half my life. I drank for 3 years, and that's it. And full force. And in those 3 years, you know, I used to be embarrassed that, you know, maybe I didn't, like, lose a family and lose a job and whatever, you know. But you know, obviously that's a gift that I got sober so young. But, you know, what I did do is, you know, I went from being a 3-5 student to a 1-5 student. I drank, you know, I went from binge drinking, you know, on the weekends to drinking every day, you know, and I had no way of socially connecting with people. You know, this disease is so, you know, it we have no idea how to socialize. You know, we're so driven by this, like, self-hate and this, you know, this sickness, this soul sickness, that we don't know how to relate to people. And by the time I was done drinking, I had actually had a planned suicide. And so that's where alcohol took me, to death. Right? Insane, jail, or death. And the only thing that stopped me was a friend of mine beat me to the punch. And watching the aftermath of, of suicide is a very painful thing. And, you know, what stopped me was knowing I couldn't do that to my mother. That's what stopped me. So that was actually on December 28th, 1989, but January 1st was the day I planned to commit suicide. So, that's my anniversary date. So what has it been like? Thank you. What has it been like since I've been sober? You know, I went through college sober, if you could imagine that. And that was not easy at all. I mean, you know, everybody around me drank. There weren't a lot of young people. I was in Erie, Pennsylvania. You know, like, what do you do there? People drink. They go and they tip cows and they drink. And that's what they do. And or take baseball bats and hit mailboxes. That's another thing. But, you know, so that was really tough. And but, you know, I managed to stay sober, and because I went to meetings. I didn't go to a lot of meetings because it was, you know, it was a tough balance. But I, you know, went to meetings. And the next part I just want to talk about is, you know, in I want to say long-term sobriety, but I want you to take note of what I'm going to say. In sobriety, when you feel happy and complacent, you feel like you have everything. You got the job, you have the relationship, you have everything. It is so easy to disconnect from this program. And so for the first, I would say, 13, 14 years, I was connected to this program. And then I got the job, I got the relationship, I got the yay, 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 you know. And then the great I am, I stopped going to meetings as much. I had a change of jobs where I wasn't as connected to my sponsor because I wasn't in the area. And the great I am took over. And, you know, the great I am made a huge mess in sobriety. And, you know, without getting into other things, I think we all know what, you know, the spiritual disease can do. And when it's untreated, it will destroy your life. If you don't come to these rooms and work these steps and find a higher power. And I was in a situation, you know, I started to come to AG last October, and that's when I met Bonnie. And at that point, just to kind of put it in reference, I was actually dating an active drug addict who was like a junior drug dealer to a senior drug dealer. That's where this disease took me, untreated, without a drop of alcohol in my body. And it was because I wasn't going to meetings, and it's because I wasn't working the steps, and it's because I wasn't working with my sponsor. And I don't know if Robin's here, but Robin from Jersey City, Jersey City's in the house, I know I have some people here. You know, she actually, but last October, I remember saying, look, I need a sponsor, and she reached out to me, and she brought me to this group, so thank you, Robin. I appreciate that. I've been working really engaged in step work, and I'm cleaning up a lot of messes, and, you know, but I'm so grateful because I realize how close I was to a drink. You know, I realize how close I was to actually picking up, and just because you get the things does not mean we should disengage. In fact, you know, my suggestion to anyone who feels complacent and you're cruising along and you're thinking maybe you don't have to go to meetings, maybe you don't have to call your sponsor, you do. I promise you, you do, or you're going to end up dating a junior drug dealer, okay? Not so pretty. And, you know, am I perfect? No, but I'm getting better. And the stuff that I've tolerated before when I was not engaged in the steps is becoming more painful at a quicker rate, and so I'm less tolerant of it. And I'm slowly starting to change again, and back to the person that I want to be. You know, I will say this, from a small child, I always had this idea of who I could be, nothing grandiose, just a good person. You know, and when I'm in these rooms, when I'm connected to people, when I'm reaching out to other alcoholics, I'm closer to that person. I'm closer to becoming that person. And that I am grateful for. And I think I have, yes, I'm just about out of time. So, you know, I am so grateful to all my friends here. Again, I'm so grateful to my sponsor, my sober sisters, and for all of you. And for those of you who are counting days, you know, just keep coming back. You know, don't be overwhelmed by the size of this group. You know, don't be overwhelmed by, you know, being having things suggested to you. It works. I promise you that. Okay, thank you.
Great.
That was wonderful. Thank you. Our second 10-minute speaker is Sandy.
I'm Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. I was not nervous until everybody kept coming up to me and telling me how nervous I looked, and now I'm beginning to get quite nervous. But it's great to be here. I had a I hope I don't look too nervous. I had a great day today, and it's really easy to sort of share the AA message on a day that really goes your way. You know, it's possible on all kinds of days, but today was a great one. You know, a couple months ago I finished graduate school, and I started looking for a job and going on interviews all over the city, and it was awful. You know, I thought I'd wanted to be a literature professor, and then all of a sudden I wanted to be a businessman, and it was a difficult transition, to say the least. But like this morning, the company you know, that I really wanted to work for called me and offered me a job, and it's like totally the result of, you know, the people in this program, in this room especially, who've helped me and like carried me through that. You know, if I had spoken last week, I would have said, you know, AA really doesn't work. In fact, I was here on Tuesday night, and my opinion was that AA didn't really work. You know, I had a couple sponsees. I was going to meetings, the same number of meetings, you know, last week as I'm going to this week. You know, I had to ask somebody for help. I had to go up to Jeff K after the meeting and say, you know, something's wrong with me. I'm miserable. And you know, he had the answer. The answer is always like, what's your relationship with that, with a power greater than yourself? You know, and you know, I had stopped trusting that power. I'd stopped trusting. You know, I'd stopped communicating regularly with God. You know, I just didn't want to pray. I didn't want AA to be the solution. You know, I just wanted to feel miserable, so I did. And then, you know, what do you know? You know, I took direction. I asked Jeff for, you know, what should I do, and he said, why don't you start praying more, you know, more seriously. And I did that, and you know, as soon as I turned those results over, you know, things started going my way. You know, as soon as I forgot about the consequences and let God do for me what I can't do for myself, wonderful things started happening. And that's really been my experience, you know, with trusting God. You know, I fall away all the time, and I think we all do. You know, we have those moments where we just don't believe that God is going to take care of us. It's been my experience that God always does. It's not that he's going to, it's not that he did, it's that he is right now, you know. And all you have to do is open your mouth and ask for him to come, and he does. So even when I think the program's not working, it's working, you know. It's doing things for me that I can't really do myself, you know. I'm asking for help. That's not what I did when I was drinking, you know. I was a really terrible alcoholic from the time I started to drink. It, you know, I guess I should just say why I'm an alcoholic, but, you know, a good way of putting it is that I like the feeling produced by alcohol too much to learn from my experiences with alcohol, so that, you know, terrible things happen. I lose relationships, girlfriends, friends. I upset my parents. I lose jobs, money, you know, et cetera. People don't want to talk to me anymore. I have to go outside in the morning and, you know, see if my car is parked outside because I can't remember driving home the night before. You know, these things happen. These are things that, you know, when I was little, I didn't imagine for myself. And yet I don't say to myself, you know, even if I do say, why don't you stop drinking? That same day, I could start drinking again. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've woken up in the morning and said, I'm never going to drink again, only to get drunk the same day, you know. I promised a girlfriend once that I'd stop drinking for Lent. I showed up at her house the same day drunk, you know. The expression on her face and whatever she said, I can't remember exactly. You know, how could you? How could you? Don't you have any willpower? You know, the truth is, like, what I've learned through NAA, you know, after many experiences and many relapses, you know, trying to get sober, promising myself on my own that I would stop drinking, is that I don't have any willpower when it comes to alcohol. That's really why I need that relationship with the power that's greater than myself. You know, I started coming to AA at 19, and I didn't get sober till 23. You know, all those times I came into AA, 30 days, 60 days, 10 months even once, you know, I came here to stop drinking. That's it, you know. This time, you know, November 21st, 2004 is my sobriety date. When I came in this time, you know, I came in to change everything about who I was. Like, I'd suddenly realized, you know, that this wasn't working. You know, it was the sort of greatest moment of my life, you know, when I realized that I was wrong about everything. You know, I'd gone to an AA meeting the day of my last drinks. I remember nothing from that meeting. I went out to a bar with some friends. This is a warning to the newcomer. You know, it's not a good idea when you have 2 weeks of sobriety to go to a bar, even with friends. I brought a cup of coffee with me, thinking that I would just drink coffee in the bar with my friends. I ended up having nothing to say to these people. I'd grown up with them, known them my whole life. I couldn't talk to people without alcohol. You know, I needed that alcohol to make me feel comfortable in my own skin, to make me present for the people around me, people I'd known my whole life. And, you know, midnight struck, I had to drink. You know, I couldn't stay still in my own skin. I had to take that first drink, you know. And I woke up the next morning in a place not knowing how I'd gotten there, you know, and the same thing had happened again, you know. Here I was. I got into a taxi cab, had the taxi driver drive me to buy more alcohol in the more early morning. You know, I was shaking. Even just after one night of drinking, I was shaking in the morning and I needed more. Went to a friend's house and drank in the morning at a friend's house. You know, passed out sometime probably around 1 o'clock. And when I came to, it must have been in the early evening, and I walked without a thought right to the refrigerator. I didn't have any thinking. You know, that's the thing. There's a mental lapse when it comes to drinking in me. You know, here I was. I couldn't have felt worse. You know, my head felt like somebody had bashed it with a baseball bat, and I went right to the refrigerator for more alcohol. You know, I don't learn from my experiences with drinking. You know, what happened to me was that something stopped me, you know, and you know, that was sort of the beginning of a relationship, a real relationship with a power that's greater than myself. I had made plans, and I always tell the same story. I had made plans to go to the movies. The movie was only playing one night. It was a Saturday night, and I had made this plan with people, and I really wanted to see the movie. And I knew that if I took that drink, the one drink, you know, I wouldn't make it to the meeting. And suddenly it clicked that I was totally powerless over alcohol. If I take so much as one drink, I don't know what's going to happen, you know? I'm the kind of person who's been in a restaurant, you know, with other people, nice, normal, civilized people, you know, having a drink and with dinner. And then suddenly I look at my drink disappearing down the glass, and I feel like I can't breathe, you know? And I had to excuse myself as I'm going to the bathroom, you know, and then order a drink at the bar, drink it quick, so that when we get second drinks, it doesn't look so strange that I'm on my third, you know? And that's the kind of drinker I am, you know? I can't have just one. And when I realized that, you know, I don't know how I made it through the next 24 hours, but somehow I did. I didn't drink that night at dinner. I went to the movie. The next day I woke up and I went to a fireside on the west side. You know, I had no idea that this was going to be the time that I got sober, honestly. You know, but I had that willingness to change everything about who I was. I'd seen the steps on the wall. You know, I thought I had done them all because I'd read them on the wall. That was good enough for me. I lied to everybody. I lied to everybody in AA. You know, from the age of 19 to 23, I lied to everybody in AA. You know, the first honest thing was somebody said to me when I came back this time, you have about 2 weeks now. And I said, no, I have one day, you know, it was a remarkable that I was able to tell the truth. And it really, like, you know, something was different. I wanted to get sober. And so far I have, you know, it's been 2.5 years. I came to the Atlantic Group when I had a little over 90 days You know, a lot of people talk about the seed saving policy at this group. The first time I came to this meeting, Clancy was speaking. I sat down and was immediately asked to move. You know, get out of my seat. I've never seen the guy again. Maybe I wasn't aware. I've never seen him again. The next week, you know, I found another seat. I wanted to be here. I'd heard a tape of Clancy, and I knew that I needed to do things that disagreed with me. I came to this meeting for that. The next week, I came back, and the same thing happened. You know, somebody said, get out of my seat, 2 weeks in a row. But I found another seat. You know, I didn't, like, the point is, like, something about this group, you know, and I think it was just the structure, the fact that people kept telling me they do the book and the steps there, and I knew I needed to do something. You know, something had to be different. You know, all those other times I'd been to AA, I kept drinking, so what was going to be different? And, you know, I found this group, and little by little, you know, I was pretty shy. I really couldn't take my head off the floor, you know, when I first came here, you know, really nervous about meeting new people. But I made a couple friends, and, you know, my big breakthrough, I think, came when I learned that service was going to save my life. And it was at the Atlantic Group dance. I had talked to Bob Stack. He was running service at the dance. And he had said, you know, you're going to feel like such a loser at that dance. Come find me. You know, come find me. Come find me, and I will give you a service commitment selling sodas or something. And you will feel 100 times better. I did that, you know. I felt like such a loser at that dance. And when that happened, I went and found Bob, and I sold sodas, and I had a great time, you know. The point is, I was outside of myself, you know. And all of the service that I've done, you know, I can think about myself all day long. I do it most of the time. Most of my friends in the program and outside the program will tell you that that's true. But I, you know, the point is that I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines, you know. I will take the service commitment. I'm on the steering committee now at Intergroup. That's not a service commitment that I wanted, but it's one that I have and I'm going to show up for. You know, not all my service commitments are service commitments that I want, but I show up for them. You know, and I don't drink today because I have a wonderful life, and I think that's what AA is all about. Thank you.
Our main speaker tonight is Cynthia.
Quick. Hi, family. My name is Cynthia, and I am an alcoholic. And I just want to say that it is truly an honor to be here tonight. And when me and my two sponsees walked in, we looked at each other and we're like, holy moly. This is a really big room with a lot of people, and I'm so, so grateful that you're all sober and not on the street. So, a little slow today, are we? Anyway, my sober date is September 8th, 1992, and my home group is the Oceanside One Day at a Time group, and that's in Oceanside, New York. If you don't know where that is, that's Long Island in the house. And yeah, all right. I don't know where my sponsees are. Just wave so I could. Oh, there you are, way in the back. You guys should have stood up when they asked for visitors. But we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that later. Anyway, so I invite you to come down to my home group, and we meet on Sundays, and we meet on Mondays, and we meet on Thursdays. And I know that anytime I walk into a room and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions are hanging, I am in the right place. And I'm really glad that they told me to dress in a business attire. Because that's how I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor always told me when I get up in front of a room to make sure that I am looking presentable. And that wasn't too hard for me. So I'm really happy and honored to be here. And I'm really, really hoping and wishing that this was already over. But you know what happens? You know what happens? It takes God a little time sometimes to move in. So I'm waiting on him. Right now, that's why I'm kind of, because you know, once he moves in, I'll be all right. Then I can move and sit down and allow him to work through me. And I always just ask that if one person in this room is touched by anything I say tonight, then my job has been done and the message has been delivered. I'm going to give you a little background. I'm really glad I don't have to keep looking at my watch. Because the timekeeper is here, so I'm really glad about that, and I can be obedient today. Just to give you guys a little background about where I come from and my family, I come from a family of five, and my dad was the grand poobah, alcoholic of the family. And, you know, we always say that we're never going to be like them. And I would always say, I'm never going to be like my dad. I'm never going to be like my brothers. And the reality is that usually we end up just like them or even worse. But I didn't know that at that time. All I knew is that my house was a little strange. And today, you know, I like to say that we put the funk in dysfunctional. And, you know, it was just different. All I knew is that a lot of times there'd be a lot of yelling going on and there'd be pots flying, and I just didn't understand it until I realized that my mother was mad because my father drank all the time, and she didn't know how to handle that. So she just started fighting and beating him up, and I would watch that all the time. And I was daddy's little girl, so it really hurt me to my heart to see her do that. And I didn't understand it growing up as a kid. I didn't understand why every time my dad came home from work that she would send me to get his check. I didn't understand when he came home and he was short a little bit of money, she would put on a hot pot of water and throw it on him. And I didn't understand why, you know, she would ask me to help her do these things. And I grew up to really, really hate my mom because of that. And, you know, I was so much a loner. And at 5 years old, I can remember just hating the person that I was. And you have to really wonder, what could be so bad in somebody's life? At 5 years old, you feel like you just hate yourself. All I knew is that my insides were just not fitting my body right, that I just didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. That's all I knew. All I knew is that I wanted what you had. I'd go to your house and your family would sit down like normal people and eat together. And there was no cops at your house. And I wanted to stay at your house. I didn't want you to come to my house because I was so afraid that if you came to my house that you would see how and what was going on. And I didn't know how to explain it. But I remember my dad being daddy's little girl. He'd send me to the refrigerator to get his Rheingold beer at five. And you know, kids really do what they see. That's what they do, and that's what I did. I'd go, and I'd open up the refrigerator, and I could still see that white can with the red letterings. And I'd pop the top, and I'd do like my dad did when he popped the top. He'd pop the top, and he'd take a swig, and he'd say, So at 5 years old, I'm popping the top before I bring it to him, and I'm saying, But I didn't really understand what that sound was about. I didn't understand what that all meant, but I just did it because that's what he did. So when I willingly took my first drink, it was, I guess, 15, and I was on the golf course with a bunch of people, some guys and some girls, and they were having fun, and they were laughing, and they were drinking this stuff. And I'm all I could think and say to myself is, there is nothing so funny. Don't you guys realize that I'm in so much pain? What are you laughing at? Because I just didn't understand it. And all they said to me is, you know what, Cynthia? Just try it. You'll like it. And I know today that, you know, there's no gray area for me, that I'm either all the way in love or I'm all the way hating it. You know, there's no middle ground for me. And I remember taking that first drink, and they were drinking Mad Dog 2020 and Thunderbird. And I should have known anything named Mad Dog would give me a problem. I mean, Wild Irish Rose and all of that kind of stuff. Who drinks that stuff? I did, because that's all I knew. And when I took that first drink, I can remember that feeling. That feeling that it was burning on the inside, and it felt like it was just burning all the pain away. That's what it felt like. And that's that feeling that I ran after. And I'm listening to these guys, you know, I'm like, God, I was out there for a long time, like 20 some odd years. And I could just remember, I always wanted to feel that feeling again. And we always try to chase it. That's why we stay out so long, because we think we're going to get it. But the reality is you're never going to get it again, ever. And if you think you are, we're telling you you're not. And I think that I'd get it, and I think I would be almost there, and all of a sudden I'd be grabbing it, and then it would not be there anymore. So, you know, you never get that first feeling again. The only thing that they forgot is that they forgot to tell me that by taking that drink that I would be selling my soul to the devil. See, they didn't know that I had this allergic reaction to alcohol. They had no clue that when I drank, I could not guarantee what was going to happen. They didn't know that. They didn't know, you know, like they say that you break out in handcuffs, but I break out in spots like Brooklyn and the Bronx and other, you know, and you know, in bed with somebody else's husband. And those are the kind of spots I break out into. But they did not know that. They forgot to tell me that I would lose everything I had just to get the next one. They forgot to tell me that I would stand on the street corner and sell my body for $5 just to get the next one. They forgot to tell me that I would sleep around. I didn't care who it was with. It could be my best friend's husband. It did not matter. Like, they forgot to tell me that I would lose all my morals and all of my values and all my self-esteem. They forgot to tell me that. They didn't tell me that if I picked up that drink that I would hurt people in my life that I really, really didn't want to hurt. They forgot to tell me that. They forgot to tell me that I would take these hostages in my life and just like use and abuse them. They forgot to tell me that I would not know how to stop. They forgot to tell me all of those things. And so I was on this mission for so, so many years, always trying to get that feeling again, always trying to feel good on the inside. And Alcoholics Anonymous tells us it's an inside job, that there's nothing on the outside that's going to fix what's wrong on the inside. But I had not heard about Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. But I thought if I could just find the right man, I'd be okay. You know, I don't know if anybody can identify with that. But you know, some things just go together. You know, like peanut butter and jelly and cheese and crackers. Men and alcohol just fit perfectly together, you know. If I didn't have one, I'd take the other, but I prefer both of them at the same time. But anyway, see, when I get excited about alcohol, I start taking off my clothes, so I think about AA and I get so excited because I'm so hot and passionate about life today. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if I start shedding my clothes, don't worry about it. It'll be all right. Whew. I thank God for laughter today, because when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not know how to laugh. And you guys were some laughing people. And I just could not stand you. But anyway, before I came to AA, you know, I just stayed out there for a really long time doing all of these things that I just really didn't want to do, but I didn't know how not to do them. And I could remember always praying, God, can you just kill me? Please, please, I just don't want to wake up today. Can you just stop the pain? I want to get off. I don't want to do this anymore. I didn't know how to not drink. If I ran out of money, I could stop for just a minute. But my mind was always going, and I was always thinking and trying to scheme, always, always, always thinking about how to get the next one. And then I lost myself along the line. You know, we talk about crossing this line in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I crossed this line that I didn't even know was there. But what I knew is that I would look in the mirror, and I couldn't recognize the person that was looking back at me, that I had lost everything. You know, even though I grew up in this dysfunctional home, I still had some values that were taught to me, but somehow I lost them along the way. And I would just make all of these promises that I wasn't going to do it today. And as alcoholics, we have this build-in forgetter. I would say, and I would just say, God, you know what, if you could just get me out of this one. You know, really, I when I first started drinking, I said, okay, God, you wait right here. I'll be right back. I got this covered. Because I thought it was me getting me out of all of those situations, all of those places that I really didn't belong. I thought I was just that good, you know, and I pat myself on the back a lot of the times, you know, and today I know that, you know what, I had nothing to do with it. If it was not for the grace, if it was not for the grace, I would not be here today. I do not deserve a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. What I deserve is to be 6 feet under or in jail or in a psych ward. So it has to be the grace. that has us all sitting in this beautiful, fabulous church. Who would ever thunk it? I sure didn't. So anyway, my bottom came via Nassau County Jail, and that's the jail we have on Long Island, if in case you didn't know. And I had lost everything. You know, I got married along the line, you know, picked up this guy who was just like me, and I always thought he was worse than me, but, you know, I was probably a lot worse, but I would never admit that. And I took him in as a hostage, and I can remember doing all of these things, you know, like stealing jewelry around from around his neck when he was sleeping, you know. And then he'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm missing some jewelry. And I'd be like, well, you know, maybe you left it somewhere. And it's only two of us in the house. And, you know, that kind of stuff. And I had a daughter along my journey because I figured if I would have a baby that I would stop. You know, we always look for things to help us and make us stop. The reality is we stop when we get so, so tired. And we just can't do it anymore, and we have that willingness. And that I have just been so beat up by this disease of alcoholism, and that I am willing to do whatever it takes. And that's the point that you have to get this thing. You know, if you're a little wishy-washy, you're not going to get it. You know, it tells us in the big book, half measures avail us nothing. Nothing. You know, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed this path. It should say, never have we seen a person fail. Because I know that if we follow the path, then we're going to be okay. But anyway, I'm jumping a little bit. How many minutes I have? Okay. I got to get to recovery now because that's where the solution is. Because we all know about the pain. Because if you didn't know about the pain, you wouldn't be sitting in this room right now. And, you know, I had this child, and I thought that I would never drink when I was pregnant. And I'd always set these milestones for myself, and I would always say, if I ever get that bad, I'm going to stop. And somehow that milestone would always get pushed back and back and back, and I always got that bad and even worse. And I drank through my whole pregnancy, and, you know, I never thought twice about it. But anyway, I had lost everything. I became homeless with my daughter because the husband decides he wants to leave. He can't take it anymore, and I couldn't understand why. You know, don't you love me? Aren't I a good wife? Don't I cook your food and wash your laundry? Because that's what I thought it was all about. And we're walking the street, and that mother that I hated so much took me in. You know, because mothers have this unconditional love that no matter what, they're just like always there. You know, they're like always there. And I'm so grateful for that because I don't know where I would have been. My daughter would have probably been taken away from me, and rightly so, because I was not a good mom. You know, I couldn't even love myself, so how could I love her? And if I ever said to you that I loved you, you should run really quickly because if I loved you the way that I loved me, it wasn't very good. So anyway, my mom invited me to come into her house. And now all I could think is I have a built-in babysitter. I don't have to worry about nothing. That's what I'm thinking. And then one day she asked me to write a check for her. And I don't know about you, but whenever I knew that I was going to get over, I'd get all happy on the inside. Something would start jumping around on the inside. And I didn't know why. But we have this disease that just talks to you. And even in sobriety, it tries to get in there. And one of the speakers talked about that. And my mom asked me to write a check for her. And so my disease said, take one for yourself. And I'm like, oh, what a great idea. So I took this check. And, you know, I never have one of anything. I don't know. I could never have just one drink. I would plan on having one drink, but never have it. I'd go to your house. I'd have a bottle stashed somewhere else, and I'd drink up your stuff and then drink up my stuff. Always had to have two men just in case one acted up. I'd have a spare on the side. You know, always never having one of anything. And so when, you know, my mind said, just take one check, and I took that one check, in an instant, I wanted another. You know, we always want more and more and more. And it seemed like forever before she asked me again. And then finally she asked me to write another check for her. And my disease said, just take the whole book. I said, okay. And I took this whole book of checks, and I'm writing these checks like they're mine and signing them and all of this stuff. And, you know, this disease just, you lose your mind. I forgot that checks came back. I don't know what I was thinking. I didn't even worry about it, but if you drank like me, I never thought about the consequences. I just did it, and I'll worry about that later. You know, when I think about drinking, like, I had no problem keeping it in the day, but then I get into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't even keep it right here, right now. What's up with that? You know? Anyway, the day came back when all of these checks came back, and I remember that scream. That my mother screamed that day. And I came running down the stairs, and these checks were all laid out. And she's crying over these checks. And she's like, well, look what somebody did. And I said, oh, my God, Mom, who could have done such a thing? The disease of alcoholism that just has you lying and just making up stories. And I went to the forgery department with her, and I filled out all the papers for her. And I'm telling the detective, it's not me, it's my brother or my sister. It's not me. But a mother knows. And so I went to jail for forgery. And for those of you who have never been to jail, you don't want to be there. I am not jail material. I went to jail, and I had no self-esteem. But they took my bra, and they took my shoestrings. And they just took anything that I had left. And I remember that they gave me this uniform to put on. And this is what I remember second most about my stay. And they gave me this green suit to put on. And in my mind, I'm thinking, green is not my color. I have nothing in my wardrobe that's green. And they expect me to put this green thing on. And I'm looking at the guys, and they have on orange. And I'm thinking, I like orange. I look good in orange. The insanity of this disease, instead of saying, Cynthia, what happened? You know, look at your life. How did you end up at this point in your life? I didn't get it. I just didn't get it. And I was in jail for a half a day. So you can imagine if I was in there any longer, I would have really, really, really been in trouble. So this judge said to me, either you can stay in jail or you can go to AA. And I'm thinking, well, this AA. I didn't even know what AA was. I'm thinking AAA or, you know, like, that's what I'm thinking, or American Airlines. Nobody had told me about Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody was talking about it. And that's why it's important for us to be out in the public to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, because you just never know when somebody's going to need you. And so I figured, well, it has to be better than jail. And then I got here, and I'm like, I don't know about that. But anyway, I came because I didn't want to stay in jail. And I, my first experience was my first home group, which was a Glenhead group. And they were having this big, big party, their anniversary party. And I remember walking in, and the disco ball is going, and the music is going, and everybody's dancing. And I'm thinking, yes, I am in the right place. They sent me to the right place. And I'm just watching you guys laughing and having fun. And I'm looking for the booze, because there is just no way that people can have fun without drinking, because I just didn't understand that. And then I'm watching you guys. And you know how newcomers always wonder, how do you know that I'm new? And I always say, just stick around long enough, you'll get it. But I remember I was holding my bag, and I'm walking around scared to death, because you guys were so touchy-feely, you wanted to touch me and hug me, and I didn't want you to touch me. But I was watching you guys go into the garbage can. And I'm thinking, okay, the booze is in that garbage can, because everybody keeps going over there. So I made my way to the garbage can. And I'm digging down in this garbage can and looking for the booze. And the only thing I came up with was some Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi. The closest thing to beer was root beer. And you guys just said, keep coming. And I'm so grateful that you said, keep coming. Because everybody else always told me, you know what, Cynthia, we don't want you here. Just don't come back anymore. And then I came to my first meeting, and I remember walking in the room, and they had that think sign upside down. And I'm thinking, these people can't help me, because they don't even know that sign is upside down. Somebody better tell them. You know, this is what I'm thinking. And then you guys have these things called suggestions. And I'm thinking, well, that means to me that I could do it or not do it. And so you guys said, sit up front. So I sat in the back. And you guys said, come early and stay late. So I came late and I left early. And you guys said, stick with the women. And I'm like, yeah, right. Well, why would I do something like that? So I stuck with the men. And then you guys said, get a sponsor. So I said, I got to do that because everybody's always asking, you got a sponsor? You got a sponsor? So I wanted to be able to say, yes, I have a sponsor, but I wasn't telling you that I wasn't calling her, or I was only calling her when I knew she wasn't home. You know, I'm sure some of you guys can identify, may still be doing that today. But, you know, and then you guys told me to share, and that was my favorite part, because I love to share. I would raise my hand, I say, I'm Cynthia, I have 2 days today, and you guys would go ballistic. You start cheering and get all excited. I get excited, I go home and have a beer. And I come back the next day and say, I have 3 days today, because I didn't get this thing. I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to be drinking. I didn't know. You know, I came in here with these blinders on. You know, like, I didn't see anything. I didn't see that first step that talks about, you know, my life being so unmanageable, admitting that. I didn't see that. And then I became my own sponsor. And I don't know if anybody has ever done that. And then my sponsor said to me, you know what, Cynthia, you don't need to go to those meetings anymore. They don't really know. All they want to do is hold your hand and hug you and kiss you and all of that stuff. You don't need to really go anymore. And relapse is not a requirement of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it does happen to some of us. And, you know, around here we say a lot of stuff, and one of the things that was said is AA ruins your drinking. And I didn't understand what that meant until I was back out drinking again. And I would try to go into the liquor store, and don't you know, every time I turned around, there was a smiley face from AA. I just thought you guys were following me, because everywhere I went, there you were. And I'm so glad today that everywhere I go, there you are. It does not matter where I am. You guys are always there. And for that, I am so, so grateful. And I just stayed out for a long time, a little long time. And it just never got better. And then finally, this old timer said to me one day, Cynthia, have you had enough yet? And I'm thinking like, well, what is he talking about? You know, we're still trying to, you know, fake a move. And I'm just like, he said, listen, if you can't do it for yourself, do it for your daughter. She just deserves to have a mom who's sober. And she was 10 at the time. And I came back into Alcoholics Anonymous by God's grace. And I got busy. And I got this sponsor who was like a drill sergeant. And they told me if I wanted to live, I better ask her to be my sponsor. And she was one of those screaming sponsors. I don't know if anybody knows what that means. She was a yeller. And I was so afraid to ask her to be my sponsor. I was so timid. I said, will you be my sponsor? And she looked me up and down, and she said, you better call me every day. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I could do that. Yeah. And I just walked away. And she goes, where you going? I'm not done yet. And I'm like, oh, Lord. And then she says, you know, she didn't say it as nice as I'm going to say it. She said, this is my train to recovery, and if you want to ride, you better hop on because I ain't making no stops. And I'm thinking, well, I am not that well yet. Let's take it out in the parking lot. I'm thinking to this woman, and I'm just so grateful for her, you know, because what did I know? I didn't know anything. I didn't know how not to be the way that I always was. I'm so grateful today for the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, because you know why? A man can't teach me how to be a mother or a woman. Only another woman could teach me those things. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous today, I don't dress like a hoochie mama anymore. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And you know, and they would pull me to the side and say, you know what, Cynthia, that skirt's a little short, and you could bring the shirt down a little bit. And I'm thinking, why? This is like, you know, my top 10 outfit. And they're like, well, we're going to work on that. And I'm so grateful that you guys worked on me, because you know what? I would be so lost without you. You know, I came in here, and I just had enough, and I was willing to do whatever it took. And, you know, we have 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I think about the 12 steps, I think about the yellow brick road. Because what I wanted to be was happy, joyous, and free. But, you know, you come along and you take this path. And if you think about Dorothy and this yellow brick road, and you think about this, everybody on this road, and everybody is looking for something. There's somebody who wanted some courage, and somebody wanted a brain and a heart. But they followed, and they stayed on the path. And at the end of the path, they received those gifts. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does for me, that I stay on the path. And sometimes I may rear off the path. I'm not perfect. And I'm so grateful that you guys tell me that this is a program of progress, not perfection, because if I had to be perfect, I would never, never, ever be here today. But I know that I can learn that, all of my experiences are not for me. They're for somebody else that God is going to put in my path that's going to need to know that, you know what, I've done it. I've been there. There's nothing unique about me. And my sponsor would tell me that all the time, and my feelings would get hurt. And I'd be thinking, well, where's the love AA promised me? I wanted to feel special. And today I do feel special. I don't need anybody to tell me that I'm special, because you know what? On the inside, I know that I'm special. You know, this that you see that's here, it's because on the inside, that's what I feel. I don't have to fake it today. What you see is so real. You know, I think about my job, and I worked in the corporate world for many, many years, and today I work for the homeless, and I've come full circle that I serve people who are just like me, that every day I get to wake up and think about, how am I going to make a difference in somebody else's life? That little girl that all she knew was a mother who was drunk all the time, she'll be 25 in like a month, and I'm thinking to myself, how did that happen? Like, I woke up and I had a 10-year-old. Where did she come from? And they didn't even give me a book with her. I didn't know what to do. So I'm so grateful that you guys mothered me so that I could mother her. And today I mother other women, because that's what this whole thing is about. It's about passing it along. It's not about getting it and leaving. You know, I can't do that, because there may be somebody who needs me. Somebody who needs what I'm saying here today. There just may be somebody who needs to hear what I have to say. When she went off to college, she wrote her essay about me, and it was called The Recovery. And she talked about being 5 years old and what it was like to have a mother who was drunk all the time, and what it was like to walk the streets and not know where she was going to get her next meal, and what it was like for her to have to worry about me. And today, you know, she's just so amazing. And if you stay here long enough, you know, AA doesn't promise us all these things and gifts and cars and license and insurance, all of that stuff. It promises us that if we just don't pick up the first drink, we're not going to get drunk. All the other stuff that you've received in your life is a gift. That's all it is. And I always like to say to people, just encourage each other. If you see somebody without a smile, just give them one of yours. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. And I'm just going to close with this, because, you know, she's getting ready to give me that goodbye, and that's almost like this, and I can't stand that. So I'm just going to say this one thing. You know, I had 2 years sober, and, you know, this girl saw me, and she said, oh, my God, Cynthia, you look so wonderful. What kind of vitamins are you taking? And so I just thought to myself, and I said, I take AA vitamins, and I take them one a day. Thank you for allowing me to share.